WPFW, Washington.
Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and June. Mark, Terry, and Garland. Three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW, 89.3 FM. Welcome. Again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of the Raucous Caucus. My name is Garland Nixon, and I'm right here with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D. Kester.
And we are here tonight. We'd like you to join us. We're here at Ben's Next Door on 12th and U, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. Got plenty of room. We got hot food and cold drinks and fun times. And we're here every other week. If you've been listening to the Raucous Caucus, you know we're on every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. On...
Though we happen to be there next week because there's five Tuesdays in March.
That's right. So next week we'll see you. You're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and if you're trying to keep track, it's really simple. It's the second Tuesday, the fourth Tuesday, and the fifth Tuesday.
When they exist.
Well, the fourth and the second always exist.
That's true.
At Ben's, first and third, we're at the studio so we can take your phone calls.
And just look at it this way. Come on down next week. That's the easy one. We'll be here next week. We'll be at Ben's Next Door, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl here in Washington, D.C. And look, we have a microphone with your name on it. That's right. I'm sitting here. I'm looking at a microphone, facing out towards
the
audience.
Empty microphone is a sad thing.
And just waiting for you to make your... Now, think about it. It's a 50,000-watt station here in Washington, D.C. You want to be part of the conversation. You got important things to say. Come here. Join us at Ben's Next Door. Be a part of the conversation. So tonight, we're going to talk about, I guess it's
You want to do our special announcement first, our special request, so we don't forget that?
Special. You go ahead, Terry. You go forward.
We need a volunteer artist. Just a volunteer to help us create a little bit of signage so we can display it here at
Ben's Next Door.
Yeah, we will supply the crayons, whatever you need.
Poster board, magic markers.
We'll reimburse you for that.
But the dirty little secret is the three of us have zero artistic talent.
Well, we have lots of artistic talent, but our hands don't work too well.
You can get rid of the word artistic. Zero talent, period. I don't know what we're doing here. Speak for yourself, Carl.
Yeah,
you're right. you know, they took our crayons away a couple weeks ago.
we kept poking each other in the eyes with them, kind of like the
That's because they put you in that little right room with that padding.
Yeah. But we do. We'd love to have a volunteer give us a call at the station.
And you can look. You can email me, garlandnixon@wpfw.org. I finally got my WPFW.
You can just find me on Facebook and let me know.
Send it to Garland. We're trying to simplify it.
garlandnixon@wpfw.org. Just email me if you've got some artistic talent, or you know what, if you just want to help out and maybe you know somebody with some artistic talent, or you can, you know,
find a way to get it done. Give you credit on the air and thank you profusely. Every single show.
But we'll thank you profusely. Yeah, certainly, you can
come.
I don't want to promise and forget one week.
And you
can come here to Ben's and have a glass of ice cold water on us.
Yeah, you
because
can.
That's
yeah,
just
can.
The kind
well,
of guys
let's
we
get
are.
Right to the topic.
Oh, wait a minute, there are topics. Oh, that's right. We're supposed to be doing a show. Okay. My bad. We're going to be talking about Libya tonight. Of course, the obvious.
Where?
Libya.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, there's a war.
Yes, there's something. No, not exactly a war. There's some type of intervention.
Action.
The question is, what are we, a police
call
action?
I don't know.
Okay,
call
so
it
what's
a
happening?
War.
Well, one of the things we need to talk about, a couple of things, but number one, and that is, are we in a new paradigm wherein the use of force in the Middle East is fairly routine? You could have to ask that. The other thing is this, when we look at, let's look at a couple things real quick, and then we'll get started with this crew, but... The first thing that I think about is I think about kind of a foreign policy that if you look through Democrat and Republican, there's an American foreign policy that's very similar but to different degrees. Here's what I mean. Under Bill Clinton, the type of intervention you saw was a Kosovo. You saw there was some bombing of Iraqi installations. There was kind of an interventionist policy that said, I'll go in and do something, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to jump in the quicksand. I'll stick my feet in, wiggle it around a little bit, and pull it back out.
We'll throw sand in the pit, but not get in the pit. We're not going to jump in with it. Right.
When you look at what President Obama is doing right now, actually, to me, when I look at it foreign policy-wise, it's pretty much in line with the kind of things that Bill Clinton did. They're So I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, if I'm honest about it, I look at what the Democratic president does, the last couple of Democratic presidents have done regarding
foreign policy. Are you forgetting Korea, let me
finish.
Vietnam?
Wait, hold it. We're in a new paradigm, Terry.
New?
No, I can't forget it. I wasn't alive.
Yeah, Terry, we weren't born during Korea and Vietnam. Yeah, so
are you
count.
Forgetting the Mexican-American War?
it's obvious you guys weren't
but,
born.
So what I'm saying is, in recent times, what we've looked at was... And
since
you look
1980.
At the, you look at the Bushes, and what did you see? You saw more in depth. You saw getting involved in a war and attacking someone and staying there. So at any rate, we're going to discuss this. What is it? Is there a difference? And I say this, with America, you get the same foreign policy, but depending on who's in charge, it's to a different degree. The degree of intervention and getting out, and one is the invention of the degree of diving in with both feet. So let's start with Terry. Terry,
hi.
I know that not only do you support this 100%, but you only wish that you right now were able to personally don a military uniform and cross the border into Libya, armed to the teeth.
Anti-war. War should be way beyond the last resort. It creates chaos, it only leads to destruction, and it creates the next war down the road. The paradigm is not different. So the last time we declared war by Congress, which is probably the way it should be, was back in, 1940?
World War II.
1942 against Bulgaria, Romania, and a couple of others. The last time it was done, Truman threw it aside. You know, Johnson threw it aside. Kennedy threw it aside.
You were middle-aged.
The paradigm ever since, Korea, that we go to war when a president wants to go to war. When the military-industrial complex wants to go to the war, we go to war.
We came up with new names for war, right?
We
don't even have to call it war.
No, we didn't call it war. It's engagements or something, And,
consultants.
It is interesting, that people in the past have talked about, impeaching the president because he does not go through Congress. I see Mark waving his constitution
usual. I'm ready.
The War Powers Act, you guys can help me in this because I'm not exactly in the wording of the War Powers Act, but it basically has never been challenged on whether or not it's constitutional, and I don't know how the hell it is constitutional. Regarding the situation in Libya, briefly, yes, I believe in doing humanitarian efforts and doing humanitarian action to stop it. I believe very much in what Kerry and McCain are proposing, which is
were proposing a no-fly zone, Terry. Both of them.
They're proposing a Marshall Plan for the Middle East, which is what we really need there.
But they were proposing
And as far as
action.
The war, I don't believe in the sincerity of anybody involved in it. Look at Bahrain. Look at Bahrain, home of the Fifth Fleet. Are we going to object to their terror? No. Of course not. Are we going to object to what Saudi Arabia does to its people? No. They got the oil. We fight for America's corporate interest, and that's about it.
Mark, a couple things there. Terry hit on some very, very strong points. Now, let me say this. Let me throw this in. One of the things he said was a Marshall Plan. That's some pretty heavy, you're getting into more social interventionalism. But is he right?
Well, let's see. You got 45 minutes, right?
I got to
respond to everything Terry had to say. And
that's enough. Now back to Terry.
Only took me five.
Yeah, right.
Come on,
I got to go through history. I got to go through law. I got to go through the Constitution, morality, the War Powers Act.
You got it.
Let's try to give all of us history while standing on one foot.
It's all about euphemism. Mark.
Since World War II, Terry is correct. There has not been a formal declaration of war. That's true. It's also true that prior to World War II, we had skirmishes, shall we say, that also did not have a declaration of war.
It's true.
We've gone down to Mexico. We've gone to Russia.
Philippines.
Indeed. That was a declaration. The Spanish-American War was a declared war in 1898. That one was. But if you go back to the very early days of the Republic, we actually, from the halls of Montezuma, that's in Mexico, to the shores of Tripoli. The Marines back in the early, about 1804, so I don't think I'm off
by
a couple years.
The first really foreign engagement we had.
We had a fight against the Barbary Pirates.
We keep on going back to the same spot.
And we did not have a declaration of war.
Nope.
And one of the reasons we didn't, I would dare say, is if you look at our friend, the Constitution, which I do have in my hands, and the audience at Ben's can verify that I'm actually... Yet having the Constitution.
It looks like the comic book version to me.
It's real. It's real. Too. It's
Let me see the crayon drawing.
The Constitution says two very different things that people may not have realized, the difference between an army and a navy. It says that the Congress has the power to raise and support armies. In other words, there's no standing army under the original Constitution.
Right.
We can
right.
raise one. but to provide and maintain a Navy. Now, that may seem a very subtle distinction, but it's an important one. The idea is that the Founding Fathers understood that while we'd have to raise a Navy if we had to declare war, we had the militias.
You mean army.
An army.
Yeah.
If we had to declare war, we had the militias for sort of like if they came immediately, that we'd always have a Navy around because we didn't understand in those days, at least there was no idea of a standing army. That was not a good idea. We've changed that paradigm. Terry's absolutely right. But that we'd have a Navy around to deal with skirmishes like the Barbary Pirates off the shores of Tripoli. So at the end of the day, the argument is whether or not this is a war a la Congress needs to declare war or whether this is more like a skirmish with the Barbary Pirates. So we can argue whether it's more like one or the other, but at least we should understand the legal argument. Now, Terry's absolutely right. After World War II, the first war we got involved with was Korea. And Harry Truman argued at that time that because we sign on the United Nations via treaty and because the United Nations Security Council authorized Korea, that was a back way for Congress to declare war. No one challenged him. We went to war in Korea.
Well, there was nobody there to challenge him. There was China, was Taiwan, Russia was in a total mess.
I'm talking
mess.
About America. I'm not talking about the United States.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, okay.
Yeah.
So then comes Vietnam.
The Security Council approved
it. We are lied to.
And the others abstained.
We are lied to, but there is a resolution based on lies called the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution.
It was
not a declaration of war. It was an authorization by Congress, entirely based on lies. No question about
it. Kind of like Iraq.
Then in 1973, over Richard Nixon's veto, Congress does pass the War Powers Act, which says that in an emergency situation, the president can put troops in, but if Congress doesn't authorize them in the next 60 days and you get one more 3-day extension, so really it's 90 days, then he's got to withdraw them. I actually think the War Powers Act is a nice, modern, constitutional way to deal with both the congressional power to declare war and the president's need in the modern age to deal with
it's
emergencies.
It's totally impractical, and they knew that when they wrote it.
That,
they're never going to say to them,
Barack
we
Obama,
have soldiers on the ground. We can't withdraw now.
I think that Barack Obama in the next 60
honor.
Days will go to Congress.
Oh,
he will get an authorization.
Of course he'll get the authorization.
And then it will be legal in my
now,
view.
Let me throw this in, because I have to throw something else in, too, something I said last week, but I want to throw it out there. And that is, I think part of the problem we have, and I'm not. This is not about whether Libya is right or wrong. Part of the problem we have is this, and this is why I'm so against this humongous armed force that we have.
Yeah.
It's kind of like guns. If you know, the right argues if you give everybody a gun, less people will be shot. And I always say, well, if you have a small town out in the West and people are getting – you have a problem with people getting bit by rattlesnakes, you give everybody a rattlesnake to carry around and fewer people will get bit. It makes as much sense.
It does.
But what I'm saying is, if everybody has a gun, they're going to be tempted to use it, right?
That's right. They want
we
to use it.
We create this humongous military. We create these humongous ships with planes that can go all over and reach all over the globe and attack at Antarctica and blow up all the penguins, in a hair's breadth.
Penguins?
Yeah.
Penguins may be carrying weapons of mass destruction.
I never thought
they're
about
all
that.
Dressed up in their tuxedo. Who knows what they're
I don't
hiding.
Trust them.
That's right.
So, at dosage, Mark.
Yeah.
Dosage.
But you see what I'm getting at, Terry? Part of the problem is the military-industrial complex controls us so much so that we build this humongous military. And anytime anything happens, we look at it and we think to ourselves, well, if we really wanted to,
let's pound the crap out of
it. We could deal with it because
shock
we could just send a ship
shock
over there. That's I make the argument we should
arm
have,
the penguins.
Right. First of all, you got to arm the penguins.
Yeah.
But we should have a defensive military that's much smaller, that's able to defend us from attacks, that's able to help allies, etc. You look at the countries that can do that, like in Europe, and they can also do things like provide medical care for their people. So
yeah,
I think a big
right.
problem is that our culture is driven, our foreign policy, tail wagging the dog, our foreign policy is driven by the fact that we've got this humongous monster of a military that's always locked and loaded and ready to be used.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that really is part of the problem, and it's the proof of the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about. Eisenhower, the one man as president and as commander-in-chief of the Allies, et cetera, commander of the Allies, should know better than anybody else and warned the whole country, and nobody listened, that you guys are in big trouble with this military-industrial complex that is growing and growing and growing and growing. You got the whole Fifth Fleet sitting over there on the USS Ronald Reagan with all those beautiful F-16s.
One of your favorite, that's your favorite ship there, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, sure. Just name them after any president you want. Remember, they used to be named after things like, you know, the Constitution. But anyway,
right.
You know,
states.
It's all
things.
Sitting there. Trust me, I'm a frustrated pilot. I love airplanes. I love the smell of jet fuel. I'd give my eye teeth to sit in a fighter jet and be catapulted off a carrier.
Great, because we need people to drop a few bombs. You know, will you help us, Terry?
The point is, you got all those toys and machines at your disposal.
Woo-hoo!
Yes, you want to use them. You do not want to sit on USS Ronald Reagan and just cruise around the Mediterranean.
That'd be fun.
And
what does
nothing.
This button do?
That's
right. Oh, boy, that's a nuclear weapon. Oops.
You know, if you've ever been inside of a Stryker vehicle, you want to drive that Stryker vehicle. These are amazing weapons of war.
Mark.
And people love them.
Mark.
Want to use them.
The first day, Mark, yeah. the first day here in Tripoli, we fired off 100 Tomahawk missiles.
I believe it was
160. 160. Oh, my gosh, 169, my mistake, at a million each. They cost $1 million each. You know, they've got like a 1,700
But the second
miles.
Day, apparently, our allies, England and France, did more than we did.
Right. But well, here's what I'm saying. So one day, now, we've got people dying of high blood pressure. We got people in this country who die of high blood pressure because they can't get blood pressure medicine. We spend $169 million in one day. And now, don't get me wrong, Mark. Part of my objection to this is that we're already into humongous wars. If we weren't in these in Iraq and Afghanistan, I probably would not be, because I wasn't like this in Kosovo. I wouldn't be as opposed. But part of it is this. We're spending all this money. We're broke. Oh, but at least we got money to give tax cuts to the wealthy.
Let me say this.
Thank God we got that.
I agree.
Thank God.
Garland, with every word you say, Terry, I agree with every
okay,
word
back to Terry.
You say. You both got, you both got your facts wrong. Right. But you're both wrong here, and here's why you're wrong. All right? I am not a pacifist. I've never been a pacifist.
I'm not saying I'm a pacifist.
I respect
anti-war and pacifist.
I respect pacifists, but the poor Tibetans, they got their place conquered. I mean, I respect pacifism, but they often get the low end of the stick.
Yeah, don't confuse pacifism
okay.
with anti-war.
I believe that there's
a difference.
I do believe there are just wars and unjust wars.
There are
you
necessary
both,
wars.
You both know... I was very much opposed to the war in Iraq. I thought
You're
it
right.
was an incredible waste of money. We were attacking a man when his own people were not rising up against him. You can see where I'm about to go with Libya. And Saddam Hussein, the crimes that he committed, and he did some vicious things, were in the 80s.
Right.
And we were attacking him 20 years later.
And we supported him when he did it.
It's kind of like invading Germany now. It's
right.
a little late.
Yeah,
so,
but he had gone ahead and signed oil contracts with France
I understand
and China.
That
and
Iraq
we had to get that
was
oil.
That was the real
oil.
Oil. We
that
needed
that.
That.
Okay.
Yeah. Iraq was about oil.
Yeah.
What happened in Libya and the reason why last week I called for us to act before President Obama did, you remember. This was right after the Arab League called
but
for
But you didn't
on
want
Saturday.
It to be international. And you didn't want it to be UN.
No.
We had that argument.
I was fine. Look, I'm always fine if they want to join with us, the international community. I think it's better. It's always better. But what I saw...
I want a recording of that
what
show.
What I saw was a leader who said, and Barack Obama quoted this, I will find you. If you're hiding in your closets, I will find you. I will root you out. I will show no mercy and no pity to a city of a million people... And if there's any doubt of his intentions, just check out the fact that after the Security Council acted, first thing Muammar Gaddafi did was declare a ceasefire. The second thing he did, he sent tanks into Benghazi and started shooting civilians randomly.
We averted
a massacre.
Were there any doubts about his character in Pan Am 103?
No. But
Why didn't we take care of them? Just because he was killing Americans instead of
his own people? We bombed a few. Look, it was awful. But even that horrible act is not the same as going to a city of a million people and basically...
It's nice
okay,
you can
let me throw a question. Let me throw a question to you.
It's genocide,
you
know, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me throw a question out to Terry. Okay,
Terry. Yeah.
In the event that...
Hello?
In the event
yep.
that we weren't doing the Iraq-Afghanistan kind of thing right now, that we were kind of where we were in the 90s with Kosovo, okay? All things being equal... How would you feel about this particular this particular military endeavor, if we hadn't done the Iraq, if we hadn't done the Afghanistan thing, would that change the way, in any way, the way you look?
Believe it or not, to some degree, in that way, I actually agree with Mark. I apologize to the listeners.
Wow. Wait, we need music for this. This is the yeah, first.
Right. It's not a first. It's a second.
Okay, fine.
Second or third. But I agree with Mark. But my caveat is, I don't, what makes me almost ashamed to be an American is there's no consistency in our foreign policy. There's no call for democracy or humanitarianism in our democracy. Our democracy, our government, our military-industrial complex, our corporate world responds to what is, quote, the American interest. Not defense, but American interest, meaning American corporation. If we really believed that humanitarianism or the love of democracy was behind this, we would have done something about Yemen right now.
Trey, did you support the war in Kosovo?
We would have done something about Bahrain. We would have done something all over the place. We don't. We ignore totally where it's going to cost us a little bit of oil or whatever. We just ignore whatever atrocity is going on. Libya, we can go into safely because it's only got 2% of the oil, not much of that. You know, and who cares?
Terry,
we can go into there.
Did you support the action
thing.
In Kosovo?
Of course I supported Kosovo, but it wasn't...
I didn't know that.
But it wasn't because of our humanitarian love. It's because they didn't have anything we really needed and wanted.
So you think Libya's about oil? Is that what you're saying?
But that brings a question. So, Terry, realistically, though, if you look at it that way, that changes the way you would decide. You see, you know, if it's and realistically, isn't it just as bad to say I only support it if they don't have something we want as to say I only support it if they do have something we want?
No, because
it's
I am
the same
I am saying,
thing. Because the question here, the issue here for is that Mark's position is, look, here's someone who said I'm about to commit genocide.
That
therefore,
should be the measure.
Regardless of whether or not
that
they got oil the or it's Canada or Mexico
and
or it's Germany, under those circumstances, we need
that.
I think that's Mark's point, and it's a strong point.
That's the measure that things should be. That's what our foreign policy should be based on if we have any integrity at all.
That's why
it should be based on humanitarian
action.
Causes. But then why aren't we doing something about Yemen?
Oh, I'll tell you why.
Why are we ignoring Bahrain?
I'll tell you why.
Yeah, Fifth
Fleet. I think we already know the answer to that.
No, let's talk about the answer. All right. In Yemen, we've got
the
difficult...
Sixth Fleet?
No, that's Bahrain.
Bahrain, okay.
That's Bahrain. In Yemen, you've got a horrible dictator, president,
quote-unquote,
Saleh.
Been there 30-some years, right?
I think 40 years, actually.
40 years, yeah. Long time.
His people are opposing him.
Yeah, people are impoverished.
And you've got a heavy al-Qaeda element.
You got some al-Qaeda.
You probably are the most powerful al-Qaeda outside of Pakistan.
And
so President Obama has a very difficult balancing trick in Yemen because you've got the horrible president, and waiting in the wings, you have horrible al-Qaeda. And the only difference between the horrible president and the horrible al-Qaeda, both of them mistreat Yemenis, is that the horrible president doesn't hurt us, and the horrible al-Qaeda hurts us.
You're leaving out a key thing, and if you've read today's paper, you'd have it. The primary leader right now in the Yemen opposition is a former general, a former supporter of the president, and he is a general that we
know... And I hope he does well.
...that we know from WikiLeaks, from our ambassador, said this guy is basically talking out of two sides of his mouth. He's supporting al-Qaeda, and he's going to be the government we support?
No.
Because he's starting to
revolution. We're not doing anything in Yemen because my point is that Yemen, choice A, choice B, and choice C are all bad choices, all right? And no one in Yemen that I've heard of is actually threatening anything like what Muammar Gaddafi does. He's going to raise a city.
They're not threatening they're just doing it.
They're shooting demonstrators.
Yeah, they don't have to threaten it. They're just doing it.
You know, Mark brings up a strong point. Mark brings up an interesting point here, Terry, that I think we got to touch on, and that is, let's face it, every situation is different, right? So in reality, when I say Middle East policy, in a way I'm off.
Every country's different.
Yeah, because our policy towards Libya as opposed to Yemen or Bahrain or Iran or whatever, you know, realistically, don't we have to take each individual country and evaluate
from the beginning
separately
from the
something
beginning.
That we've never done. I might
yes
well
right.
We can't erase the past
no
right.
but from
yeah,
the
yeah.
Be-
but
from
the
no,
beginning
I can't erase
but,
what George
no,
W. Bush
but you know
did
what
Iraq.
We do what we do
you can't
darn which we've done historically time after time Afghanistan Iran, whatever it is. We support the bad guys when it's in our interest to do so.
Yes, we have.
Until the situation...
I can't change the past.
You're right.
Until the situation explodes and falls apart, and then we go, geez, how did that happen?
All
true. And then, if we want, depending on which way the bread is buttered, and which side the bread is buttered on, then we decide maybe we should support or not support whoever is now in charge. We create, by our own inconsistency...
All true.
We create... the problems that come back to bite us.
All true, but Terry, we can't change the past. Two wrongs don't make a right.
Why don't we change foreign policy now?
Here's my point. Whatever was done by George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, I didn't vote for them. I didn't support it.
Harry Truman, LBJ, John F. Kennedy.
Well, something Harry Truman did I like. Some things I didn't like. Yeah. But my point is this. I can't change what happened. And neither can Barack Obama prior to his election as president. So now, going forward... what I like about Libya is, for once, God help us, we're on the right side of
history.
We
don't have any idea what's going on.
For
Libya,
once,
Libya
the people can be grateful to the United States, an Arab country.
That is not true.
They
we should
grateful.
Be supporting Egypt.
They're definitely grateful.
We should be supporting Tunisia.
We are supporting Tunisia.
Now we are, yeah, finally. But Libya is tribal, is really tribal. There is no unity in Libya. We have no idea which way
There's
this is going to go at
right
this point.
Now.
You've got, again, a military that's really kind of iffy over there. You know, if we changed our policy in terms of what McCain and Kerry are proposing, then I'd agree with you. But I bet you we won't do that.
I'm not supporting a Marshall Plan
for
dictators.
I bet you we won't do that.
But I will for
now. Let me ask you a question, Terry, then. And I'll throw this out to you. What do you think we should do regarding Libya? Should we intervene, or should we just let what is going to happen? What do you think we should actually? What, Terry, President Terry?
Oh, thank
D.
you, thank you,
Kester,
thank you. Thank you.
What is
thank
your
you.
Benghazi? Thank you. What do you do? Do you let them massacre the people?
What do you do,
President Kester?
Given the reality of where we are now, what we should do is really limited. Really limited.
Well, you're giving the orders, President.
What are
we going to do?
Are you actually supporting?
Well, don't interrupt the President.
Yeah, please. Try not to.
Can't you see the big seal in front of him?
Impeach! Impeach!
Yeah. What we really should do at this point, given where we are, is, one, I agree with the general international involvement.
Okay.
I agree.
Come along.
I agree with the Arab, or appreciate the Arab League situation, mm-hmm. as long as we are very careful with that. We should... really set a limit. We're going to go so far. I mean, you know, all we got to do is go up about 500 miles and we got all the oil ports lined up. But say this is the line.
Those presidents, all they think about is oil.
That's I know.
Right. All the same.
He's been right. Eisenhower warned us about
five
you,
minutes,
President.
5 minutes that's as president right. and Terry's turn.
No, I'm talking realistic.
The oil president.
But say this, we're
Slick
not going to go any further. You know.
So it sounds like you actually are saying that if you were president, you would have stopped the massacre in Benghazi that was about to happen.
Benghazi and a couple other cities, I think, going to
well,
the
Well, then your
west.
Position is not that different from
and
the
not,
current president.
You know, but
I gotta
that's
tell
a
you.
Big difference out of bombing.
That's a big change from
That's a big
Terry
difference out of bombing
week.
The living hell out of Tripoli, which we've
we're
been doing.
We're not bombing the living hell
well,
out of
you know,
Tripoli.
But
we're bombing the air defenses.
And see, that was
oh,
part
not
of
a single
yeah,
civilian part of, has improved
yeah, naive, part of the discussion. Naive. Part of the discussion from the beginning with this was. In the reality, and a lot of generals said it, the reality of a no-fly zone is if you're going to have one, you have to attack the air defenses first to stop them. So if we're going to do a no-fly zone, there's no question that they, you know, there was a discussion, well, if we're going to do it. I think, here's what I think, though. When I look at Kosovo and I look at what Bill Clinton did, went in, said we aren't going to be there long, did what they were going to do, and got out, I wasn't too bad with that.
And NATO
but,
went in
so,
first.
So I'll say this. Well, there wasn't a lot of time, but let me say this. If, in fact, they go in, they do – it's if it looks kind of – if it looks and feels and kind of smells like Kosovo
– we're good. Go on.
Then I think I probably won't be too – so part of it is looking – when this thing's over, looking
is
at it
Is it a
with
skirmish
me.
Or a war? We don't know yet.
Do, which you can't do.
We don't
but
know
Kosovo
yet.
Is not comparable to Libya.
But well, no.
We
but
don't
in either,
know
in
yet.
Either case – you know, we could draw a line in the sand, literally, and say,
right.
Gaddafi, you aren't coming any further. We're going to help these people build a new country.
Right.
And
yeah, because that's part
it.
Of it.
So you're for the division of Libya. We can talk about that after the break.
Why not?
Yeah.
If we're divided, why can't Libya
well,
be divided?
Well, I'm looking at an engineer, and I think we need to – do we get ready? We need to go to a break. Okay. You're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW here in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon with
– Mark Levine.
And
– the pacifist Terry D.
Kessler. With the Raucous Caucus. Be back in 1 minute.
Hey, it's Bobby Rocks, a.k.a. Cleveland Spears, and I want to personally invite you to come and have lunch with me for First Friday's Lunch Broadcast, 1 to 3 p.m. live at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. Great food and music by yours truly, plus it's on the Green Line Metro at U Street Cardoza. Again, come down and have lunch with me April the 1st. That's for the first Fantastic Friday Broadcast Lunch Mix on 89.3 FM and live at Ben's Next Door.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. Garland Nixon, Terry Kester, and Mark Levine here. And we're talking Libya and Middle East policy and foreign policy, war, peace, and everything in between. Yeah, everything
I got a dirty little secret here.
Uh-oh.
And it's going to make Terry just going to blow his mind.
No.
You and I are not that far apart.
Didn't I just say that I agreed with Mark for
I got to tell you something.
I admitted
something.
Let me put it this way. Mark is actually
should have done
right
something
for
in Libya.
Once, so therefore I could agree with him.
Well, you know, one
but,
of those...
But see, you act, you get this all this rhetoric about all the dangers of war, all of which I agree with, but then when you push you hard, President Kester, you weren't going to let that massacre occur in Benghazi.
No, what I'm saying...
And I give you credit for that.
What I'm saying is... I want to see a real change in our military policy, in our foreign policy.
As do I. But
and
with
until,
Libya,
until that change is spoken and determined and defined and debated, the rest of this is just the military having a good time.
But you would you'd stop the massacre.
I would
admit
stop
it.
Them.
There you go.
I would let them
the
have
massacre.
A. I would All let right. them have a good time on a very.
You're not as pacifistic as you claim.
You know, I've heard a lot of various rhetoric from both sides. Now, you know, here's what I think. Let's discuss this for a second, and that is the interesting part that domestic politics plays in this. Have you been? I don't know if you guys have been.
I don't think this is a domestic.
No, here's what I'm. No, everything is now. No, no. Here's what I'm saying. Domestic politics. Listen to what I'm saying. Moving into 2012.
Oh, yeah.
How domestic politicians are reacting, are utilizing, are playing.
Way to go, Garland.
Et cetera. You know, one of the things I've always kind of said jokingly, but it's realistic, is if Barack Obama really wants to do something, what
Find
if he really
war.
Wanted to do this, what he should
Start
have did was the day before he should have said, "Look, I am absolutely." Positively opposed to any intervention whatsoever in Libya. And of course, Fox News all day long would have said, he's wrong. We got to take some action in Libya. And the next morning, he could have said, you know, I've been listening to my friends on the right, and I've come around to see things their way.
And they'd
I'm
say,
going with it.
And they'd be like, no, he's a warmongering.
Right. I mean, when we turn on these channels or listen to the right, they can't decide which way to oppose it.
You know what?
They'll stand there, and some of them at the same time will say he moved too fast.
President
he
Obama.
Didn't move fast enough. He should have acted. He shouldn't have acted. He's acting,
quote.
But
let
not
me
quite
quote.
Enough.
Let
just,
me
just,
quote.
Just real quick.
Okay,
let me
quote my
let's,
former
let's,
president.
Let's hear Mark before you quote.
Real quick, okay. And then you can quote. I was actually on Fox and Friends this morning. And the reason I'm telling you this is because prior to Obama making a decision, you're absolutely right, Garland. The right was saying, why isn't he acting? Why isn't he acting? Today, I go on. They pit two concerns against me. I support the president's action, which, as y'all know, I did before
right,
he,
yep.
before he
yeah,
made it. And the two conservatives, they're against it. So I don't think it's about, as you say, reasonable
but
position
if he pulls,
for
but
it.
But if he says, well, we're pulling
if Obama
back.
Obama changes his mind.
If he pulls him back tomorrow, they'll say, well, he's out of line. He's got to do something about it.
Exactly.
I'm going to quote the former president of the United States, Barack Obama. Quote, this is in 2007. The president does not have power under the Constitution to unilaterally authorize a military attack in a situation that does not involve stopping an actual or imminent threat to the nation. It is always preferable to have the informed consent of Congress prior to any military action. President Obama.
Well, Terry, let me
say that. I believe that was State Senator.
I don't think he believed that.
And here's what I'm going to say, and this is something I've said about the presidency period, and that is, let me say this. People are different when they're an outsider as opposed to an insider. One of the reasons that you have to be very wary about how much power you give to the executive office
Amen.
Is because, in reality, let's not fault Barack Obama. anyone who becomes president is going to hold on to as much as power as they could. And that includes me, you, Mark, and all of our listeners and everybody sitting
me
in the audience.
Me too,
it
me
is
too.
The nature of human being. Yep. That's why the Republicans didn't want any – they don't want single payer and things like that, because they know once human beings get something, anything, they
wanna
don't want to give it
which
up.
Which is why the Founding Fathers were so good at putting buffers and barriers.
They weren't
to
good
this
enough, apparently.
Exact kind
which
of
is
action.
Why I have my Constitution in
yeah.
hand.
Mark's wiggling his Constitution.
Because
that's a bad sign.
The Constitution says has presidential prerogatives and has congressional prerogatives, mm-hmm. and they fight all the time. And the Republicans were complaining in the 90s about this overweening, powerful president. Who does he think he is?
Right.
Then came the zeros. And during the zeros, they talked about, well, of course he's the president.
Unitarian.
He can do whatever he wants.
Right.
The unitary executive. And then Barack Obama comes in, and oh, my God, here goes the president off of hand. There's always going to be Congress defending its rights, the president defending its rights. Terry, you're absolutely right. That is the genius of the founders. Everyone jealously protects their rights. In terms of war, as I said from the outset, there was a congressional declaration of war, and there's the president that's commander-in-chief. And there's always been tension, and I think actually the War Powers Act is a nice way of resolving that.
I think actually –
I guarantee you President Obama will go to Congress in the next 60 days, and he will get approval for this action.
It'll never happen.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
he already sent a letter that said – I don't know if you heard the letter. There's been a letter that said they read on the air and everything where he talked about
and
it.
And he notified them in advance, you know, but this was an emergency.
But we already know all the Republicans will vote against it, right?
You know, no, I mean, I don't think so.
This, I'm sure you guys
will
disagree.
The Tea Partiers?
No, I don't know about the Tea Partiers.
I'm sure you'll disagree with this, but part of the problem is, and it's not a problem that some countries like England, et cetera, face these days, the only reason, really, historically, that the President of the United States was made the Commander-in-Chief as well as being the President is because of George Washington himself, the one person that could have been elected president at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of a – we need civilian control of the military – but making the president, who's responsible for domestic policy, legislation, budgetary, et cetera,
he's not responsible for that. That's not in the Constitution.
I know.
No, seriously.
I know what you're saying. But to make him commander in chief as well almost requires, as Garland said, every president sooner or later winds up saying, I better use the military if I want to get reelected. And it comes down to being that simple, and he's got to do it. We should separate the commander-in-chief of the military, not from civilian, but from presidential control, as it
then
is
who?
In other countries.
Then who controls it?
Well, in England, it's a separate position entirely.
You know what?
The prime minister is not the commander-in-chief of the army.
Sure he is.
No, he's not.
He controls the generals who control the army.
No, not really. Not really.
Look, if you pull out your pocket constitution, and I know all of you carry one with you the way I do.
I memorized.
You will see... I'm going to test you on that one day, Terry. You will see that Article 1, which talks about Congress, is quite lengthy. It's many sections.
Yeah,
it's several pages long.
And the other flaw
Article
is
2,
it doesn't define the presidency
Article
well
2, which talks about the president's powers, it's very long about how to elect him.
Yeah.
But his actual powers are pretty damn short.
Yeah.
Other than giving
which is a flaw
the state,
in the Constitution.
The State of the Union and appointing people, really his only powers are he's commander-in-chief and he does pardons. That's about it.
Which is one reason we need a constitutional convention.
And he signs laws that Congress creates.
Because we've never defined the presidency, and so therefore it happens whatever the individual wants it to be.
No, but here's the thing, Terry. You got to have one person in charge of a military. You can't have a committee in charge of a military.
No, but nobody's suggesting
that. I can just
see
some people order the troops one direction, some order the troops the other direction.
Hey, I got an idea. I'll give you the Air Force, and then I'll take
I'm bombing you.
Yeah, right.
Trust me, that's the way
Navy
it is.
And,
you know, come on.
We'll give Terry the Boy Scouts.
Nah, nobody's suggesting.
Coast Guard. You get the Coast Guard,
somebody's
Terry.
Somebody's suggesting a committee. I mean, in fact, you already have that war between the various branches, believe it or not. But nobody's suggesting that. But you don't have to have the President of the United States, also the Commander-in-Chief of the military. It puts him in an almost impossible political situation.
Look, if you want to amend the Constitution, you go right ahead, Terry. But
I want a constitutional convention.
Congress still retains its power to declare war because if Congress does not authorize this action in 60 days...
90.
Believe the War Powers Act is constitutional. There's some dispute about that.
Some people
think it's unconstitutional because it gives too much power to Congress, and other people think it's unconstitutional because it gives too much power to the president.
Well, it certainly doesn't do what the Constitution says.
I think it's a nice compromise between the two. And I think that if President Obama does not get authorization in the next 60, add 30, 90 days, he should bring the troops home. But I think he's going to get that authorization.
Yeah, hopefully there's no actual troops in the Air Force to bring home.
Bring the Air Force home.
You know, the interesting thing, I'm listening to you guys and listening to listen to the right wing and listen to the discussion about the Constitution. Here's the interesting thing I always find. We all tend to argue for the Constitution,
yes,
right?
Yes.
The parts
no matter what, yeah, no matter
and
what.
And then, no position, matter who it yeah. is, I mean, you can
That's
turn
true.
On the Tea Party yeah. members who say, we love the Constitution. Yeah. Well, what about the part where when people have children, on the U.S. soil, they're all, well, we don't like that part. It needs to be changed. Yeah. No one out there, no matter how much they say they're a strict constitutionalist, says, I like the Constitution. And even though there's things in there that I don't like, I'm going to go along with them until
that.
Such time. Until
I say that.
I support
yeah.
them. Most
I,
people
look,
go to
I hate
a caveat about, but this part needs to be
Garland,
changed.
The same way I hate we use the Electoral College. Yeah, I want to get rid of the Electoral College, but I recognize it is in the Constitution.
Same way, we use the Bible, same way we use the Quran. We pick the parts we want and ignore the
Hopefully
other parts.
Hopefully the Constitution
yeah, that's true.
And then we say there's no contradiction. When there's contradictions like crazy in the Bible, in the Quran, and in the Constitution.
You're in the Constitution. It's a smaller document.
But the real point, which we're getting away from, is what do we do as a whole, as a nation? Are we in the process of protecting people, protecting humanity, or are we in the process of just showing our might and protecting our interests, which are, again, oil and energy? And
corporate interests. I think the word corporate when you say interests. It's always
which country
our corporate interests that we protect.
I think we need to define when we believe as a country, and when the three of us believe, and I think every American for themselves should define, when you believe a war is just. And I think after Rwanda, after Darfur, after the Holocaust, after the Armenian genocide, I mean, you name them, Khmer Rouge, I think there is becoming an international human law principle that if there's any war that's just, it's a war to prevent mass murder of civilians. It's a war to prevent genocide. That there can be no more just war than that, other than, I guess, defending your territory from invasion.
Right, yeah.
So if there's ever a reason to fight when our country's not being attacked, it seems to me that to prevent mass murder is either you believe that, or and then there may be other wars you believe in, but that seems to me the basic thing. Then that's why even you, Terry.
Well, before we go,
we're willing to stop the tanks in Benghazi.
Oh, hold on, Terry.
Before
we go any further,
okay,
we
Bill.
Have.
Okay,
state your name, please, if you want to.
My name is Bill.
Oh,
my name
is working?
Bill Himes.
Is that working?
You know, give
yep. okay.
Yep, come here.
And
hold on, hold
have...
on. We're gonna give you our. That mic's not working.
It's working. Okay.
Oh, it is? Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. I just want to.
Thank you.
Toss out a couple things. And I want to get your input, get you guys to talk about something else that's going on as well. One thing also that we might – nobody mentioned the Congo.
Or
if
Ivory Coast
had
for that
been,
matter.
If what has
Ivory
been
Coast
going
well.
On in the Congo
yep.
for the last – I don't know how many years
Some
had
decades.
Been going on somewhere else, it would be a world war. The casualties are in the
yep.
millions, and we,
but we don't care
about
the Congo.
The reasons for, well, actually, as I'm standing here thinking about it, because the Congo is very rich, and there's a lot to be said for that, for the idea that the same interests that drive a lot of our foreign policy might actually like a situation of chaos, because it may actually be possible to exploit an area for its resources
yep.
even without a stable government situation.
Maybe
and that
more so.
Might be what's going
Nothing
on
Nothing like
there.
Blood
maybe,
diamonds.
Now, maybe more
Love
so.
Love blood diamonds.
It. Okay, I want to open up another couple cans of worms. Okay, as far as President Obama, one of the few Republicans that I, as a member of the left, have always given credit for some degree of statesmanship, Richard Lugar.
Yep. Yep.
Did seem to oppose the president's action in Libya. And
on constitutional grounds.
Which
no,
may well be valid. Now, well, again, was that straight up or was he covering his bases on the right?
No, I don't think
okay,
it's on
just
the right.
A question.
I just think he's...
Last thing. Okay. Overshadowed by Libya, Haiti... And I brought this up with Garland before the program. now we have the smoking gun because the story was put on by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! This morning. It appears that there are forces determining our foreign policy in ways and manners that those of us... Now, again, you know, everybody, oh, conspiracy. Well, but again,
to the point,
Haiti, why would a Barack Obama want to go against the obvious manifest will of the Haitian people and try to pressure South Africa not to allow Jean-Bertrand Aristide to return to his country? And this is the smoking gun of that. And we need to, and I think, again, because it's a small little black republic or nation or whatever it is, however you want to label it, it's the smoking gun of that issue. And at some point, we need to, as the American people, get this situation out in the open, because I would suggest to you that this is part and parcel. When you have these kinds of forces determining our foreign policy, this is how you get situations that inspire people to do things like 9/11. So I'll let you jump
in. Or just inspire them to revolt against us one way or another in terms of their government that's being supported by us that they don't support.
You know,
that's a lot of issues to discuss there. I do want to pick up on what Mark was saying, though, because I think this is very important.
Okay.
The term just war is...
oxymoron.
It's an oxymoron.
I think it is.
It's an extremely dangerous term. It's one we've all fallen in the habit of using. It's an incorrect terminology. There are necessary wars.
Fine.
And I changed that word to necessary because then you can obviously see that there are things that led up to it that allowed for, even required, that it happened. Where you claim it's just, then you can just say, I'm fine with the word necessary. That doesn't exist. Right. Necessary
I'm
wars
fine with
there
the word
have
necessary.
Been.
And I would agree with Terry for this reason, because during any war, a lot of innocent people, children, you know, there are a lot of people who are going to die who had nothing to do with it and actually may even oppose their own country going to war. So, as Terry said, I agree that the term just in itself implies that when large it's kind of sterile, and it implies that large amounts of people are dying and that's somehow just. Really, it isn't, but necessary. World War II, et cetera, the Civil War, some things are necessary.
Let me deal with our guest's point.
Bill's point.
Bill's all the way here. He's sitting in front of us here at Ben's Next Door. I heard what you said, Bill, and I got to tell you, it's always tough in every situation. Clearly, there are situations where people have been completely abused that I wouldn't advocate intervention. The clearest example I can think of is Tibet, where the Tibetan people have been royally mistreated by the Chinese, but we're not going to fight the Chinese. I'm not even sure we could win. So sometimes it's a question of what we can do. Haiti is a very difficult situation because Aristide... And again, this isn't a show about Haiti, so we won't spend too much time on it. But this is a man who came in. He was very popular. Then people considered him very corrupt. And people – so a lot of Haitian people – so Haiti, I think, is much more of a – it's not clear – this isn't a case of some – I mean, Haiti's in royally bad shape after the earthquake and everything. But it's not a case of a person going out – and shooting a bunch of people. What it is, it's a country in need. I don't know whether Aristide's the right person or not. I think that, I mean, the Haitian people really get to decide that. But my point, a better example, I think, is Ivory Coast or even Congo, where you have a clear dictator who's mistreating his people. But at the end of the day, every situation is a little bit different. I agree we can't go in everywhere. To me, what made Libya so compelling, and I think this is what made it compelling to the president, was the fact that here you had a leader say, I'm going to go into the second largest city in my country, and I'm going to root everybody out and show them no mercy. I mean, it's interesting that Barack Obama quoted that. This was
And then he sent in tanks to do just that. So he actually followed up his words with
there's
action.
Let me
throw this in, too. And becomes the contradiction, the paradox that comes about when you consider yourself the world's policeman, because in a way you're the world's policeman, but you can never be the world's policeman, because you say, well, look, this is really terrible that's happening in this country, and we need to act, and that's true, right? And then people point to the Ivory Coast, and they point to the Congo, and they say, hold on, they say, however, there's an inconsistency here, because there are, what about this country, this country, this country, you're always going to find 5, 6, 7, 8 other areas where you should have
you
acted.
Can always.
So what I'm saying is this. So no matter what, there's always going to be an inconsistency when you're acting in an imperialistic way and you're acting in an interventionist way, kind of as the world police. But there's no way around it. I'm not saying that we should or shouldn't act in a given circumstance. I'm just saying when you do that, by its very nature, there will always be major inconsistencies in your foreign policy because you can't do
and,
all good for everyone. We're not omnipotent.
The key thing to recognize...
Though most people think we are in this country.
You've got to put everything in context. And the context, as you've pointed out, Garland, is an empire. That's a fact. You have to live with that or change it. But it is an empire. It also is a fact that we have a military-industrial congressional complex that basically rules the nation. We have to accept the fact also that all wars, including interventions, are basically economically based or resources based. And there's always a humanitarian element that you can seize upon to justify what you're doing. Hitler seized on what he would call a humanitarian reason to justify what he was doing. There's always that possibility because there's always people who are being persecuted, threatened, and unjust. And again, either we develop a policy that is honorable, that is humanitarian, that is peace-loving, that is peace-constructive, that is trying to help individuals in a country achieve dignity, etc., as opposed to a policy that is driven by what resources we want.
We need it. Look, Terry, for starters, we got a lot of people in this country who we need to try to help achieve dignity.
We need to start there for starters.
Yeah. Clark. Let me just say this. I can't speak for American consistency. Luckily, I don't have to. It would be impossible. I will, however.
You do, Mark. You are the voice of American
inconsistency. I will, however, speak for my own. I was loud.
Your own inconsistency?
No, my consistency.
Oh, darn.
I called both my senators and members of Congress repeatedly when Rwanda was happening. I called repeatedly. I did a show, several shows, right here on WPFW on the situation in Darfur to stop that. I supported the action in Kosovo. I supported the action here. When I see mass murder about to occur, I just want to say that I've been consistent even when America has not been.
And you know what? Let me throw this in here. To be honest, if I look at this, if I said, okay, whatever we're going to use our military for, if we didn't invade Iraqs and Afghanistans and these types of things, I wouldn't be upset with us doing things like Darfur and Rwanda and the Ivory Coast, along with the UN. When something bad was happening, we say a bunch of countries are going to go in. You're trying to wipe out 1 million people. We're going to, you know, I think there are a lot of people like me who would say if we see something really evil happening, we're all
do
for doing
something.
Anything
yes.
we can to deal with it.
We should
the
do
problem
something.
Comes in is that we're involved in a lot of things that we haven't no business in.
That's right.
And it sours everyone to the point where people who would probably look at
a possible genocide and be for it,
I'm so sick of our military interventionist policies, I don't want to do any of it anymore.
And we throw most of our energy, most of our treasure, most of our blood for those wars and efforts that have to do strictly with corporate profits and resources. We put just a little tiny smidgen into Kosovo and that area. We put hardly anything into that. We've done hardly anything really to help Haiti. We'll spend billions on Iraq because Iraq has got oil. We'll spend billions on Afghanistan because Afghanistan's got lithium. That's the reality.
I don't think that's what's going on in Afghanistan. But listen.
Oh, you don't?
No. No, I do think it's what's going on in Iraq.
Copper.
Let me say this.
Heroin is their major.
Heroin, yeah, heroin opium. Too. I mean, America's
that's
the biggest consumer of heroin.
In defense.
So heroin, copper, lithium, that's a good reason to go to war.
In defense of the current president of the United States, I think Barack Obama understands more than most American presidents exactly the history that you've talked about, Terry. I think there's a reason why he's been very calm about Libya. He hasn't rallied up, rah, 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 let's go get Muammar Gaddafi.
I appreciate
he's
that.
Gone to
I
Brazil. He got
that.
International support. Yep. He got the Arab League support. He got the United Nations.
Very important-esque.
France started, filed the first shot. This is a president that is the
opposite
of Bush. No, they didn't.
It was very Clinton.
It
was very Clinton-esque.
This is a president who was he's not rah-rah war. And I think the reason is, Terry, because he knows of our past. He knows how America is considered because of what we've done in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And he wants to change that. That's why he gave a speech in Cairo, one of the first things he did when he came into office. If there's a way to do it right, you got to give this president credit for being very different from past American presidents.
Before we go, let me throw something out there that I haven't touched on. You know, I'm listening to C-SPAN or whatever, and there's one of these a guy who travels around the Middle East. And what was interesting was, and tell me what you think about it, he said that it was surprising that surprisingly it wasn't reported in the United States. There were a lot of people in Egypt, a lot of people throughout the Middle East who felt that this let's face it, what's going on in Libya is a result of this kind of wave of
Arab Spring, they're calling it.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Okay, this wave of change that most people in the Middle East continually say Barack Obama's Cairo speech is what kind of created this. Telling the people, if you go over the words of some of the things that he said, the people should determine their future, etc. Here in the United States, it's not talked about very much, but in the Middle East, apparently, it's, you know, casual conversation. Well, a lot of that had to do with this guy coming over here and saying this to people, and people thought about, well, you know, if this guy says it, maybe it'll work.
Given the whole situation, this may shock you, I approve of the way President Obama has handled it. And I argued last week, as you recall, for him to handle it this way through NATO, through the United Nations, if we were going to do anything. It has to have some kind of world unity behind it, or it's just an empty gesture. But if our real goal is, and that speech may be part of it, if our real goal is the stabilization of the Middle East and the development of the Middle East.
And the democratization of the Middle East.
Which means it has to destabilize first.
Yeah, democratization is a big word.
Whatever they come up with.
Yeah, not with what
it's
America
their decision,
is.
Their
not the way Texas wants democracy. You know, but if that's going to happen, then we have to do much more in the terms of what Kerry is proposing and McCain proposing in humanitarian efforts to support people, to raise the dignity, to nourish the people that are there caught in these. That includes dealing with Israel differently, dealing with Egypt differently, dealing with Tunisia, Libya, all of them in a humanitarian, positive way.
Therein lies the other problem, which is this. We have people in America who have humanitarian needs of their own. We're in a position now where people are hungry and out, and where people are basically being move down to a class of extreme and
abject
poverty.
We'll just cut funding.
You know what I mean? Humanitarian aid, we got to start looking internally.
I have long argued domestically we need to raise the taxes back on the rich, the Clinton levels,
right,
and beyond
here.
To pay for the domestic needs. Let me just say one last thing, though, on this. Some of this is from the heart. When I see people out there risking their lives, as the Libyan people were, and the Tunisians were, and the Egyptians were, and frankly, so are the Yemenis and the Bahrainis. And Syria, they're really getting killed.
And losing
in Syria
their lives,
right,
not just risking losing.
Risking their lives and losing their lives for simple freedom. I got to say, my heart went out. When I thought that they were going to be massacred in Benghazi, my heart went out to those people. There is something to be said for just the basic humanity and what's fascinating about all of this is they actually thought the international community would come save them. And I like to think in some ways in this horrible, imperfect, unjust world, that sometimes people do come in and save people in need. And that's why maybe this is a decision as much of the heart as of the mind. I'm glad we're there.
Well, another thing about it is, you know, many times we throw the word madman around loosely. If someone rules a country and, like, we want to attack them or we don't like them or we're angry at them, we call their leader a madman and then we can do anything we want. But this is one of the instances where I think you can finally justifiably you can say the leader of this country is, in fact, a madman, and he's proven it fairly.
We should do everything possible with as little war as possible. And I want to go all the way back to the Iraq War and remind you of one thing. 2,000-pound bomb, drop it within 1 mile. Every child, every human being will bleed from the ears from the concussion of a 2,000-pound bomb. We are damaging, killing, and harming civilians once again because we are indiscriminate with our military force.
You have been listening to PFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with...
Terry D. Kester, the next president of the United States,
yes,
according to Garland.
The current president.
And Mark Levine, who's going to impeach that president.
Yes, right, and I'll just be like a revolutionary.
I resign. Forget about it. I quit.
Good, then I'm vice president. Woohoo!
And Garland was vice president.
First of all, we've got a couple people we want to thank. On the board, we've got Drew Franklin.
Hey, Drew.
In the studio, we've got...
David Kelly
in the studio, and of course everyone in WPFW.
And our wonderful audience here at Ben's Next Door. Thank you for coming.
That's happening. Next week, we're going to be right back here.
Please join us.
Live, you can speak out.
And we're seeking an artist. Remember to contact Garland at WPFW.org.
Oh, that's right. Garland Nixon at WPFW.org. We need someone with some artistic, unlike Terry and Mark here.
Right.
We need someone that actually has some kind of talent in their life, preferably artistically. Oriented.
If you want to hear tonight's show because you missed part of it, shame, go to marklevineradio.com. It'll be posted there.
Facebook. We're all
Might I suggest that, you know, when you email me, I'm suggesting a name change to Garland and Friends. And, you know, the more people for that.
Garland and Friends.
How about this? The Garland Nixon Show with Mark
Thank
and Terry.
God there's no ego amongst the three of us.
We will see you next week.
Right here at Ben's, 7 p.m.